This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 20th of October 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 20th of October, which this week have been edited by Linda Vincent, Keith Vincent and Jean Gardner. Now your readers today are Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. The main headlines this week are Student Action Needed, Deep Civic Cuts Move Closer, and Major Changes to the Constituency. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
Student action needed. Action must be taken to address the growing problem of studentification across the city. City councillors called for the council to properly plan for the expected increase in student numbers from 7,000 to 10,000 by 2025. The council heard that student housing is now becoming a problem in Week and Full Flood, as well as the well-reported problems in Stanmore and Winnell. In recent months, there have been several applications by private developers for large student blocks. One on Sparkford Road, West Hill, by the main campus, was approved. The other on Greenhill Road, Full Flood, was turned down. A Liberal Democrat notice of motion proposed stronger planning policy to get a grip on the issue. One councillor, Nikki Elks, spoke of how a resident, a former serviceman with post-traumatic stress disorder, had confronted noisy students partying at 3 o'clock in the morning. He lost his temper, banged on their door and told them to shut up. Unfortunately, they called the police. He is feeling vulnerable. We need to protect our residents. Councillor Jamie Scott, whose ward Stanmore has many houses let to students, said this issue began in the 1990s, when it was King Alfred's College. What were the strategic planners doing to allow that to happen? It was anything goes. Right to buy was supposed to be for families, not to house students on these estates. Councillor Martin Todd said studentification was now happening in Full Flood and Week. We do need a policy response to this situation. And he called for discussions with Winchester University, the School of Art and Sparshot College to discuss their ambitions. Senior Tory councillor Guy Ashton interjected to say, students are residents, they're not something else. Councillor Eileen Berry said the problem was seeping into Week. There's a fear the students are taking over the city. The 10,000 figure has been in the public domain for several years, with University Vice-Chancellor Joy Carter saying she did not think the city would notice. Liberal Democrat group leader Lucille Thompson said, "We have seen an increasing number of speculative planning applications coming forward for large units of student housing in inappropriate locations. The university wishes to expand by 3,000. Where will the students live? What will be the impact on residents?" Councillor Ian Tate said the mothballed Barclay Homes site at the former police headquarters on Romsey Road would be an ideal place for student housing. Southampton University bought and demolished the police station on North Walls next to the School of Art, and a spokesman said, "There were no plans at the moment to develop it."
Let's have the second headline story, please. Noel.
Deep civic cuts move closer. Plans to save millions of pounds by slashing vital services and increasing council tax in Hampshire have moved a step forward. Cabinet members at Hampshire County Council have backed proposals aimed at reducing the authority's overall spending by £140 million by April 2019. The proposal, discussed and supported by councillors during a cabinet meeting held on Monday, includes £56 million cuts to social care services, £30 million cuts to children's services, and £1.2 million cuts to school crossing patrols. subsidised bus services and community transport could also lose entire funding to save £4 million, while up to half the county's recycling centres could be closed and the hours of the rest cut to save £1.2 million. County Council leader Roy Perry asked officers to look into whether there are other ways of achieving some of their proposed economies, but he also stressed the need to find a way to deal with the pressure coming from reduced grants from the government, rising inflation and increases in the number of adults needing care. He confirmed that the authority will have to look at raising council tax by the maximum amount allowed without having a referendum. If the cuts plan is given the go-ahead next month, funding to support organisations and charities who provide youth and support services to children and young people could also be cut. The whole children's social care operating model could also be reshaped. The authority aims to reduce the number of children going into care by 410 by 2021 and develop a new social care IT system. During the meeting, Lib Dem councillor Alan Dowden expressed concern about the impact on social care services. "You are challenging social care budgets at a time when demand increases for them." Janet Chier, a trustee of Winchester Go LD, which supports people with learning difficulties, is urging a rethink. "If they cut the services, what will happen to those vulnerable people? They are already struggling." Martin Todd, Lib Dem councillor for Winchester Westgate, said, "We are paying the price for the Conservatives' incompetence and chaotic management of Brexit and the economy."
Over to Jane for the third headline story,
which is major changes to constituency. How Hampshire residents vote could be about to drastically change as newly published proposals see thousands moved into new parliamentary constituencies. Recommendations from the Boundary Commission for England have reshaped the county as 50 MP seats are scrapped across the UK. Voters in Coldon Common, Compton, Otterbourne and Twyford are to be part of the new Test Valley district, as the Winchester constituency, currently held by MP Steve Brine, is set to be reshaped. It will push further south, as far as Southwark, taking over the Meon Valley. George Hollingborough's constituency, only launched in 2010, would disappear. Elsewhere in Southampton, residents in Newtown, Northam and Bevis Valley will move from Test to Southampton Itchen. Another shake-up sees the Isle of Wight split in two, Isle of Wight East and Isle of Wight West. Now residents are being asked for their views as the plans enter its final consultation period. However, it is uncertain whether ministers will end up backing the plans. Sue Cook, City Councillor for Coldon Common and Twyford, said, "My preference is to have us still under Winchester. It just makes sense. Until I read the report fully, I would still like to be under the umbrella of Winchester. But if Test Valley can offer the residents a better service than what we have got now, then let's discuss it further." Richard Izard, Councillor for Coldon Common and Twyford, said, "Both parishes made a representation before, and we still feel an affiliation with Winchester. How can we have an MP representing us in the Test Valley area when we are Winchester City Councillors and Winchester parishes?" George Hollingbury, MP for Meon Valley, said, "I have always supported a reduction of the number of MPs because changes to constituency boundaries mean everyone's vote should carry the same weight in future parliamentary elections. Fewer MPs also means there is a cost saving for the taxpayer. Both of these are clearly in the best interests of democracy, so I welcome it wholeheartedly. Of course, I'm disappointed my constituency would cease to exist because I very much love representing Meon Valley. If these changes do take place, then I promise I will continue to do the best I can to represent residents until they're implemented." Conservative MP for Romsey and Southampton North, Caroline Noakes, said, "In a year which has seen a number of boundary changes, both local and national, it is interesting to see the latest thoughts of the Independent Boundary Commission. It goes without saying that, should the proposals come into effect, I would be extremely disappointed to lose some substantial parts of my constituency, including Bassett and Swatheling, along with Chilworth, Nursling and Rownhams." Julian Lewis, MP for New Forest East, added, "Obviously, equaling the number of voters in each constituency serves the cause of democracy, but reducing the number of MPs while not reducing the number of government ministers weakens Parliament's powers of scrutiny. If agreed by Parliament, the new constituencies will be in use at the next scheduled general election in 2022. Sam Hartley, Secretary to the Boundary Commission for England, BCE, added, "Based on what people have said to us, we have revised more than half of our initial proposals. The new map of the country, we think, is close to the best set of parliamentary constituencies we can achieve, based on the rules to which we work and the evidence given to us by local citizens. But we still want people to tell us what they think of this latest map before we make our final recommendations to Parliament next year. It's so important to have your say in this fundamental democratic exercise." The shake-up of voting regions in the country comes after a decision by Parliament to reduce the number of constituencies to 600 from 650. Following this third and final consultation, the Boundary Commissioners will consider all the evidence submitted throughout the process. They will then decide on their final recommendations before submitting them to Parliament in September 2018.
And that concludes the headline stories. We'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, editorial comment, first person, and then Belgorum diary. And we'll end with items of general news, and we'll start with the death notices. Banks. Margaret Christine Banks, aged 84. Buchanan Hepburn. John Christopher Alastair Buchan Hepburn, peacefully at home. Cole. Jean Winifred Cole, at Park Road, Winchester. Day. Josephine Day, peacefully at home, aged 96. Friend. Scott Friend. Hughes. Ronald Thomas Alfred Hughes, peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home after a short illness, aged 90. Matley. Ken or Kenneth Matley, aged 88, of Fisher's Pond, peacefully at West Acre. Stoddard. Bridget Stoddard, peacefully aged 93. And finally, Wood. Jill Wood, peacefully at Winchester Hospital. Now it's time for Christian Comment, read by Jane.
And Christian Comment this week is The True Road to Freedom. This week, the city of Winchester is filled with graduates as they file down the hill from university to receive their graduation certificates in the cathedral. Proud parents accompany their sons and daughters on their day of glory, all dressed up to the nines and celebrating their years of study. Education brings choice, opportunity, and the possibility of a job that is focused on each student's area of interest and expertise. Last Saturday, there was another line of students walking down in single file from the university to the cathedral. They were all wearing black, and each had a yellow gag across their mouths with the name Ivan, Eve, or Amy written across it. Slaves have no voice to speak out. They have no vote. They have no freedom. The students were participating in the first Walk for Freedom in Winchester, raising awareness of modern-day slavery. The names Ivan, Eve and Amy are the names of three people that the organising charity, A21.org, have released from modern slavery. Whereas the world's major criminal activity in the 1990s was based on the drugs trade, today, the most lucrative illegal profits are made from selling human beings and human trafficking. In some parts of the world, families sell their own children into bonded labour or prostitution, deceived into believing their son or daughter is going to live a better life in the West. We have all seen pictures of survivors of human traffickers plucked out of the Mediterranean. A friend told me the coast of southern Spain near Gibraltar is littered with inflatable boats and used life vests. Once stripped of their last dollar, vulnerable people are at the mercy of labour gangs who offer food and shelter and a life of slavery. At the end of their walk at the cathedral, the 50 or so participants removed their yellow banners and turned them over to reveal the word free. They then wrote letters which will be forwarded to people Aid 21 are trying to support to give them a hope and a future. Inside the cathedral, we prayed together. We were reminded the book of Genesis of Joseph, who was sold by his brothers into slavery, but he rose to become Pharaoh's second in command. After 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine, he saved not just the nation of Egypt from starvation, but people from neighbouring countries who came to buy food. He even saved his own brothers and was reunited with his father. Through his faith and trust in God, Joseph had the capacity to forgive his brothers despite the wrong they did him. Joseph said to them, "You intended to do me harm, but God intended it for good." Having the ability to forgive is the route to true freedom, even beyond that of a good education. And that was from the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, the Canon Principal of Winchester Cathedral.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. Or the email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can even write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. And we've got 16 letters this week. Well, the one read by Heather.
Jean and Paul Pollock write to thank many kind folk. "Sir, we would like to say thank you to the man who found our cat and took her to Stable Close Veterinary Clinic. Although the cat had already died, the vet was able to contact us as the cat was chipped, and this act of kindness meant we were not left wondering. Also, we would like to thank the staff at Stable Close for their understanding and kindness, especially as our animals are not their clients. It is heartwarming that there are so many decent folk in the Winchester area. Jean and Paul Pollock, Parliament Place, Oliver's Battery, Winchester."
Peter Mitchell says, "Go upmarket. Sir, I have been living in Winchester for over 50 years. During that time, the police headquarters have been built and demolished. The multi-storey car park has been built and partially demolished. The health centre has been built and is now empty. The recreation centre needs demolishing. The Brooks Centre is a financial disaster. The council offices in Hyde Street, built specifically for the council, are not fit for purpose, so they moved out. Everything about Winchester that is worthwhile was built before planning and building regulations. If, for instance, the cathedral was built now, it would be surrounded by a giant car park. I suggest that the planners who are deciding Silver Hill stand opposite the Guildhall and admire what can be done when not controlled by planning edicts. It is ridiculous to insist on shops and affordable housing in this development. There are too many empty shops in Winchester, and more would only encourage betting shops and house agents. The land is too expensive for affordable housing. What is needed is expensive houses with perhaps a permanent open market area in order to remove the encampment in the High Street. Peter Mitchell, Drove Lane, Alresford."
And Ingrid Bond writes, "Leisure site. Sir, I feel serious consideration should be given to an earlier correspondent's proposal, that of the Sir John Moore Barrack site as an alternative leisure centre area. It already has swimming, gym, running track and accommodation facilities. A large site with good road access." And that is from Ingrid Bond, New Road, Littleton, Winchester.
"No-brainer," writes Avril Burt. "Sir, the closure of Andover Road is a no-brainer in every sense. This road is the entrance to our historic city from the north, both grand and beautiful with its tree-lined verges. Rerouting traffic through the ugly Barton Farm estate will increase time and pollution to reach Winchester City by car and public transport. The latter being sparse or non-existent in the villages of North Hampshire, folk will look elsewhere for shops and entertainment. The new cycle path, whilst admirable, cannot help in the movement of supplies and the aged. I understand that major roads are in the hands of Hampshire County Council, which has seen fit to enlarge the port facilities without regard to the road systems needed to transport cargo and passengers to the Midlands and North, which results in daily hold-ups in traffic on the A34. The railway bridges were raised some years ago to accommodate large containers. Are they being used to capacity? Is Hampshire County Council allowing itself to be bullied by developers, or ignoring the will of those who elected them? I know of no one who wants the closure of Andover Road, Avrilbert, Downs Road, South Wanston.
Paul Burrows Gibson writes about remembering. Sir, at this time of year, our thoughts turn to a time of remembrance. This year, there is to be a unique and special weekend in Winchester that encompasses the theme of remembrance, but also brings the flowers of remembrance alive. In a unique and special project, over 2,000 handmade paper poppies will each have the name of someone who has served our country in the armed forces and merchant navy and who have lost their lives. Each poppy bears the name of someone nominated by a member of the family. At the same time, we pay tribute to all those men and women who have served our country in times of war and peace and who lived to tell the tales over the years and who have since passed away. Again, they too will be remembered for the time they gave in the forces. There is still time for families of anyone who has served over the past 117 years to request a name to be added to one of the poppies. And if anyone would like to do this, please send via email to stlukeremembrance@gmail.com. St Luke Remembrance is all one word, all lowercase. So it's stlukeremembrance@gmail.com by November the 8th. And they will form a sea of remembrance poppies at St Luke's Church in Stanmore, Winchester, over the Remembrance weekend. Whether from Hampshire or beyond, no one will be forgotten. The weekend itself is one for the community, and I hope that people from all walks of life will go and view this amazing and unique tribute, but also ensure that their own relatives are remembered by name in the heart of the community. We hope that the readers of the Hampshire Chronicle will submit names in the coming weeks and make this a record-making memorial for remembrance. Paul Burrows Gibson, Love Lane, Romsey.
And Kate McIntosh writes, all cars are bad. Sir, Jonathan Greatrix is correct in his statement that switching to electrically and LPG-powered vehicles would reduce air pollution in Winchester, Chronicle Letters, October the 12th. But is he concerned solely with that harm? Members of WINAC and increasingly the general populace are concerned about human-induced climate change. Unless and until we switch to 100% generation of power from renewables, charging electric cars off the grid or powering them with butane and propane, both hydrocarbons, is simply shifting the pollution elsewhere. There is the further desirable objective for those seeking to reduce or exclude all but essential motorised traffic, that of restoring our wonderful city to function as a civic space, a destination where it is a joy to explore and move around. Whatever the fuel powering the internal combustion engine, it is still a potentially lethal weapon, antithetical to intimate social interchange. And that was from Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Bob Whitmarsh writes, all to blame. Sir, your summary of the recent report on carbon dioxide emissions in Winchester District in the Chronicle October the 12th was published under a misleading headline, and the second paragraph was simply wrong. As the author of that report, I hope you will allow me to correct the record. It was not the City Council that has been slow to make progress on reducing its emissions in the last decade, as the headline stated. It was the totality of businesses and individual citizens and households within the district that made slow progress. For example, official figures show that since 2005, electricity consumption has barely decreased because the commercial sector increased its consumption by 1.5%. Similarly, another point omitted from your review, road vehicle fuel consumption was practically unchanged because goods vehicles have used about 7% more fuel since 2005, and their numbers increased by 14% since 2009. Clearly, the commercial sector needs to do much more to reduce its consumption of electricity and petrol or diesel, to catch up with the cuts in consumption made by households. I know that WINAC stands ready to advise and assist all sectors in the district to reduce their emissions, which we will need to do to stay within agreed carbon reduction targets. And the full report can be downloaded, if you so wish, from http://winac.org.uk. Bob Mitmarsh, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
Legal insight from Emma Carter. Sir, what a great day we had at Winchester Criminal Justice Open Day on Saturday the 14th of October. Thank you very much to all involved. It was a truly fascinating day. The witness service provided a fabulous insight of the courtrooms, and there was also a very interesting tour of the building, which ended up in the cells. One of the best parts of the day was a reenactment of a hate crime trial in one of the courtrooms. Judge Keith Cutler presided over the case whilst the barristers interrogated poor Luna Lovegood. Very entertaining for adults and children, with lots of humour thrown in. The day has given myself and my family an understanding and appreciation of the judicial process. Many thanks once again. Emma Carter, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
And Chris House writes, what difference? Sir, when it comes to Winchester City Council, you have to laugh. You can't help it. Readers may remember a year or so ago, a lovely picnic table and six chairs were removed from a grassy area at Hyde Lodge, a sheltered accommodation in Worthy Lane. They were made by a resident in his own time and at his own expense. The reason they were removed? Good old health and safety. Council workers cutting the grass, it was said, might injure themselves, lifting the table and chairs to one side so they could cut the grass. That was laughable then. But now, it's even funnier. The council have now, along with brand new wooden benches dotted all around the lodge, put an all-in-one wooden table with seating, you've guessed it, in the middle of the grass area. Now, unless the new table with seating is made out of balsa wood, could someone at the council tell Hyde Lodge residents what the difference between the two sets of table and chairs is? Are you laughing? And that was from Chris House, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Tony Wagstaff writes, Martial Arts Snub. Sir, regarding the titled Concerns Raised Over Planned Facilities at New £37 Million Bar End Leisure Centre article, for many years, right from 1979, I always found it hard to find facilities that are cheap enough to hire for the practice of martial arts, such as jiu-jitsu, aikido, judo, karate and associated martial arts that require room and safety matting for such sports. This could also include sports such as gymnastics, yoga and any activities that require a soft floor or thick matted area. Why is it that when people think they know what is required, they really know nothing about anything other than badminton and other ball sports that usually just require a sports hall? Nothing is ever said about the popularity of martial arts. I noticed and read the boxing club will be without a home. It seems to me that the people who come up with these ideas seldom consult those who have years of experience and know what is needed when it comes to making new plans for such facilities. All rather biased, in my opinion. Tony Wagstaff, Chief Instructor, Habatakukai Martial Arts, Walpole Road, Stanmore, Winchester.
And Judith Martin asks a lot of housing questions, which she's headed Housing Cues, which I think is the same thing. As your editorial says, October the 12th, Winchester City Council should be congratulated for its plan to build social housing in increasing numbers. But it raises a lot of questions, not just about how they might go about it, but also about past performance. For instance, how many of the good, solid council houses were sold under right to buy? And of those, how many are now buy-to-lets? Nationally, it's now about 40%. Enough family houses in Stanmore for a start for Winchester City Council to need to bring in regulations to try to dampen down the rush of student lets. How many buy-to-let landlords, having bought one-time council houses, are letting to single families? that the houses were designed for, rather than four or more students who bring in more money. And is Winchester City Council paying housing benefit to any private tenants now living in one-time council houses? That is certainly happening across the country. What is the real percentage of affordable or social housing achieved on any development, compared with the target 40%? National research says it's likely to be not more than 10%. And as for the number of homes built to replace those sold, as guaranteed by government, national figures say the level is also likely to be no more than 10%. What has happened at North Wykeley? Why has the number of affordable homes in the 3,500 scheme been reduced? Have developers been allowed to produce viability figures unchallenged? How many other schemes have promised social or affordable housing but then been let off the hook? How many in-lieu schemes, where developers give a sum of money for affordable housing in order to avoid providing it on site, have actually yielded anything worthwhile? The vastly expensive St Thomas development of 9 flats in the historic church provided, according to a council minute from 2013, £115,060, rather less than 25% of the cost of the smallest flat, and about half the cost of one smallish council house. Successive councils have allowed this state of affairs to happen, encouraged by government. We're certainly due a change. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And Mark Rowe writes, thoughts for the city. Sir, I, like many, think the Silver Hill scheme should be scrapped. Let's have a common sense solution and do up the buildings already there. 1. Change the empty buildings and the ones above shops in the city centre into council housing for the elderly and disabled. Plus, by doing this, you would help get the homeless off the streets. 2. Make it legal to load and unload only between 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. This would include the wider city centre and Christmas market. 3. Put more money into the park and ride. 4. Encourage people to use bus services more. 5. Make the city centre a no-through area. The only exception, buses, coaches, taxis, disabled vehicles and emergency vehicles in emergency situations. 6. Better sign the alternative routes around the city centre. 7. Increase cycling in the city centre. 8. Encourage parents to walk with their kids to schools. 9. Do not change the one-way system. 10. Tighter planning for Boomtown and other events. Some may agree with my ideas or disagree. That is their choice. I would like to hear their views and ideas also. And that is from Mark Rowe, English Democrats, Week, Winchester.
Roland Wateridge writes a letter about the Hampshire Hog versus Hoggett. Bronze and glories. Sir, I can't offer any authoritative answer to the Hog versus Hoggett debate, but Mr. Sparks is by no means the first person to raise the issue. I wonder how many people noticed the other Hampshire Hog on the weather vane at Elizabeth II Court. When the new HCC headquarters building was topped out in 1959, the then clerk of the County Council, Sir Andrew Wheatley, made the same point as Mr. Sparks. But Sir Andrew later changed his mind, accepted the hog as an appropriate symbol of the county, and allowed the weather vane to stay. Seems very late in the day for someone to call for the removal of the bronze hog, having been there for 28 years, since 1989. In the scale of its surroundings, some might even argue that it should have been larger. Mr. Rowe reminds us that the hog takes its place amongst a remarkable series of bronze statues in Winchester. In chronological order, and possibly also of their merit and importance, they are the Stuart kings, Charles I and James I, by Hubert Le Sœur about 1638, in Winchester Cathedral, works of national importance. Queen Victoria by Sir Alfred Gilbert, 1887, in the Great Hall, arguably a more accomplished work than his famous Eros in Piccadilly Circus. King Alfred by Hamo Thornycroft, 1901, in the Broadway, a listed monument and both a famous landmark of Winchester and a symbol far beyond. Horse and Rider by Dame Elizabeth Fink, 1974, at the entrance to the courtyard to the Law Courts, Winchester's only equestrian statue. And last, but by no means least, The Hampshire Hog by David Kemp, 1989, outside Elizabeth II Court. There is also the bronze First World War soldier on the King's Royal Rifle Memorial by John Tweed, 1922, facing the west front of a Winchester Cathedral. It's a catalogue of which Winchester and Hampshire citizens should be proud. I've limited this list to statues, but there are also other important bronze tomb figures in the cathedral. Roland Wateridge, Collins Lane, Hursley.
And Tom Williams says he's bored of Hampshire Hog debate, and this is accompanied by a picture of the Hampshire Hog, which is beautiful, and it's looks as if it's facing the camera, and it looks as if it's smiling. Bored of Hampshire Hog debate. Sir, every 10 years or so, your letters page features the Hog-Hoggett controversy, usually by reference to the delightful bronze hog outside the County Council offices. No one ever seems to mention that since the offices were built, the weather vane on the clock tower has sported a hog, not a hogget, and that within the building there is an Eric Gill stone statue of a hog, not a hogget, with the word Hampshire incised on its base. And as for the suggestion that there is no breed of Hampshire pig, I advise your correspondents to view and enjoy the Rodgers and Hammerstein film State Fair. Can we now put the controversy to rest for another 10 years or so, and let those of us who like the bronze hog continue to sit our grandchildren on it for photos and rub its nose for luck? Tom Williams, Hairstock Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
And another one about the hog, David Buttle, sheep versus pigs. Sir, as Hampshire has been my adopted county for some time, it did raise the question in my mind why a pig was outside Hampshire County Council offices. I certainly agree with the logic of C. Sparks Esquire's letter, October the 12th, that more sheep represent Hampshire than pigs. In fact, today the true pig breeds are being overtaken in numbers by these so-called rare hairy breeds, not Hampshire's. Hoggets come to mind as they are a subtype in the sheep breeding cycle. It seems that Hampshire County Council are at loggerheads with Winchester City Council on this issue. To increase the biodiversity on our council-run chalk land, then sheep are used. That is, of course, until you want to graze near a large urban population, then cattle are used. I realise, as a past breeder of pigs, that Hampshire have a breed named after the county, as do sheep with the Hampshire Downs. At the end of the day, it's down to a historical record, and I'm certain that we have had more sheep per square mile in Hampshire's history than we do pigs. So, please remove the boar like runt. And that was from David Buttle, Falcon View, Badger Farm, Winchester.
You'll be glad to know that Roger Chatterton Newman offers the last word on hog. Sir, a final word from me on the hog debate. Thank you, Mr. Rowe, for your defence of the statue, and you are certainly not mistaken in your history. But I would suggest with all due deference that Mr. Sparks looks in a copy of Chambers' 20th Century Dictionary, where he will find hogget, used as a term for both boars and sheep. I have a sneaking feeling that he will not enjoy my next book, Hampshire, A Personal View, when published, although he will be able to read a great deal more about the county's illustrious breeds of pigs and sheep. Roger Chatterton Newman, Stretton's Copse, Milland, Liphook.
And that was the last of our letters to the editor. Thank you to all of the contributors. Now it's time for your say. Health professionals are to be told to ask patients about their sexual orientation. We asked people in Winchester whether they agreed, and Noel's got the answers.
Well, four answers. First, Cornelius Attridge, 58, a charity trustee of Southgate Street, Winchester, said, "Generally speaking, it depends on what they're going to do with the information. On balance, any initiative to end discrimination is probably worth pursuing." And Leanne Wilmot, 36, full-time mum from South Wanston, said, "I don't know why it's anyone's business. If the illness is something to do with it, then perhaps." And Becca Howard, 19, estate agent of Eastgate Street, Winchester, said, "I don't think it's necessary, but if it's relevant, for example, then it could be useful." And finally, Victoria McCoyd, 22, self-employed in the arts from South Wanston, said, With doctors, maybe it is necessary, but I personally don't like it with job applications, so it really depends.
Back to the mists of time in our dusty files for historical news items. And we'll start with 25 years ago with Jane.
25 years ago was Friday, October the 16th, 1992. And two items from that paper. Firstly, ambitious plans to rescue disused office space in the city centre for Winchester's urgent housing needs have been discussed by the Chamber of Commerce. Addressing a chamber meeting last week, Jeremy Ouvrey, the chairman of Winchester District Housing Association, spoke of the sound financial reasons for businesses to convert unwanted offices for domestic use. He said, "As one walks up and down the centre of Winchester, the most common sign now on view is a building to let or a building for sale." Mr. Ouvrey said office space in the city of Winchester had previously been able to fetch £20 per square foot, around three times the equivalent rent obtainable for domestic accommodation. However, we have already seen office rents halved in the last 3 years, and while oversupply continues, there is no reason to suppose that this trend will not continue. And the second item is the start of a contract to strip topsoil from Twyford Down was accompanied by three arrests during a new round of skirmishes between M3 protesters and workmen. Two men and a woman were taken by police to North Walls Police Station and charged with threatening behaviour towards Roger Jackson, a clerk of works for the Department of Transport site agents, Mott MacDonald. Mr. Jackson had complained to the police, and during a subsequent search by about a dozen officers of the protesters' TP dwellings, he identified the alleged offenders and the arrests were made. A police spokesman said, "The protesters had begun removing wooden poles needed for the work. After Mr. Jackson had told them to stop, three protesters responded by advancing towards him in a threatening manner, holding lumps of chalk. After he had retreated inside his car, they threw the lumps at his car and placed a mound of earth on the front." One of the protesters commented, "All we did was offer him some flowers and place nettles on his car. We were chanting, dancing, saying, 'I love you, Roger,' and generally behaving in a childlike manner. We're peaceful people, and the idea that there was any danger of physical violence is nonsense."
OK, Heather, let's go back 50 years.
Saturday, October the 21st, 1967, and there are two items. Hampshire County Council hopes to build 11 new fire stations during the next 3.5 years. At Winchester on Wednesday, the Council's Fire Services Committee approved for submission to the Home Office a summary of its complete building programme for the three financial years beginning in April 1968. Scheduled for the year following that date were the completion of the County Fire Service headquarters at Winchester, the erection of a one-bay station at Odium, the addition of a second floor to the smoke chamber at Eastleigh Fire Station, and the provision of more firemen's houses at Winchester. In 1969-70, it was intended to build a one-bay station at Sutton Scotney. And the second item. During 1968, Droxford Rural District Council intend to build 45 dwellings. At their meeting in Bishop's Waltham on Tuesday, the council approved their building plan for next year. It proposed, under the programme, to erect 6 bungalows for elderly persons at Mill Way, Durley, 12 at Meon Park, Wickham, and 20 at Beer Road, Denmead. In addition, 7 houses at Mill Lane, Wickham, part of last year's programme carried forward, are proposed. The 12 elderly persons' bungalows to be erected at Meon Park replace a plan for 8 houses, which it was decided would not be approved by the ministry.
It's going to take us back 100 years.
Yes, two items from Saturday, October the 20th, 1917. Only merits will stand the test of time. For 16 years past, Winchester people have publicly praised Doane's backache kidney pills. That in itself is proof of merit. But the test of lasting benefit, such as is given here, is the most conclusive proof of any. On April 12th, 1917, 13, Mrs. M. Blake of 2 Greenhill Avenue, Full Flood, said, "It was damp, I think, that started my rheumatism. After all sorts of remedies had failed to do me any good, I began taking Doane's backache kidney pills upon the advice of a neighbour. 2 boxes cleared every sign of the backache and rheumatism away." 2 years later, Mrs. Blake said, "I'm still indebted to Doane's pills for keeping me free from rheumatism and backache. I recommend the medicine everywhere." Wonder where I can get it. And the second item is, "It is proposed to hold the annual Pocket Handkerchief Day for the soldiers at the Abbey House, Winchester, on the 31st inst, that being the anniversary of the First Battle of Ypres, which took place on that date in 1914. Surely it is very desirable such indomitable courage should be remembered. And will not every citizen, as well as the danger within our gates, show their appreciation by bringing 1 pocket handkerchief or more to the mayoress on that day for the use of the men of the Hampshire Rifle Regiments at the front and for the wounded? Should any neighbouring village care to contribute to this collection, their gifts would be gladly and gratefully received at the Abbey House any time during the week."
And finally, Jane's going to take us back 200 years.
And 200 years ago was Monday, October the 20th, 1817. And 2 little items here. As Mr. J. Sawkins of Cheriton was returning from Alresford Fair on Thursday night about 12 o'clock, he was stopped by 2 footpads at the direction post near Tichborne Down, about a mile from Alresford, who demanded money and robbed him of 12 shillings in silver and a gold seal and key. Fortunately, his watch ribbon broke, and the villains, thinking they heard someone on the road, ran off. And the second little one, rather appropriate after our hog letters. Alresford Fair on Thursday last was fully attended, and there was a good supply of sheep and lambs, which sold briskly at high prices. There were few cart horses, as well as cows, and which experienced rather a heavy sale.
And it's back to the future because we've got editorial comment read by Heather.
Thank you. Boundary tweaks are nothing new. Plans to tweak parliamentary constituencies are still rumbling on. The Boundary Commission for England is planning to reshape the county as 50 MP seats are set to be scrapped across the United Kingdom. One major change could see the disappearance of George Hollingbury's Meon Valley, only introduced in 2010. Caroline Noakes's Romsey and Southampton North constituency would be replaced by the new Test Valley constituency. Voters in Coldon Common, Compton, Otterbourne and Twyford would move into the new Test Valley district as the Winchester constituency is set to be reshaped. Do residents in those communities feel part of Test Valley? Probably not, but they could find themselves pulled in that direction. Elsewhere in Southampton, residents in Newtown, Northam and Beavers Valley could move from Test to Itchen. Playing around with boundaries is nothing new. The Representation of the People Act 1832 tackled the problem of rotten boroughs, but there were calls even before then for reform without success. Issues surrounding population size, geography and community ties and identity remain 200 years on. And the Commission is right to try to equalise the size of constituencies. But as far as possible, the natural ties of communities must be retained.
And this week's First Person Opinion is by Khalid Aziz and it's read by Noel.
Yes, his headline is Whining, Dining, Hollywood Style. He's writing about Harvey Weinstein, or Weinstein, and inevitably there are details which some of you may find offensive. Harvey Weinstein is just the tip of a very large iceberg, says Emma Thompson, now well on her way to becoming a national treasure. Certainly, Weinstein is facing a meltdown of titanic proportions. Reputation, business, marriage. Footage of the movie mogul with his wife, British-born Georgina Chapman, recalls Paul Newman's line about his wife of 5 decades, Joanne Woodward, "Why step out for a hamburger when you have steak at home?" Weinstein must be ill. Certainly he thinks he is, with no compunction about revealing how he's already receiving counselling, no doubt to be cited in mitigation if and when he's prosecuted. The bigger issue here is the rebalancing of relationships between men and women. Men have been abusing their dominant position since, well, the dawn of man. Cartoonists depict cavemen clubbing women over the head and dragging them off by their hair, presumably to sate their lustful desires. As foreplay goes, it's not great, but then neither is Weinstein's alleged warm-up routine of disappearing into the bathroom of his hotel suite and returning naked as a jaybird, as they say in L.A. Women tell me very few men have what it takes physically, bulging biceps and rippling six-packs, to impress with the naked form. I know I certainly don't. I do have a six-pack, but it's always been well hidden, first beneath a party seven and more latterly under a keg. Modern men rely on that old stand-by-the-chat-up line. Here again, Weinstein struggles. Why don't you give me a massage? Doesn't really cut it. Anyone with the most tenuous grip on reality would know such an invitation would have most women reaching for the sick bag. He clearly needs help. The key question resolves around just who else is out there predating on women, as La Thompson suggests. But here's the problem. Even the self-confessed feisty Emma Thompson, while condemning all those who knew but didn't speak out, is content with saying predatory behaviour is rife, but sees no irony in not naming names herself. Everyone knew about Harvey, but no one spake out. What, though, are they to speak out about? Thompson compared Weinstein to Savile, but there's no suggestion that children were involved. In the US, they have statutory rape, designed to remove all possible legal doubt. If you have sex with someone underage, even if they were up for it and looked of age, you're going to jail, which is why Roman Polanski had to flee. Showbiz and the less glittering associated worlds of music and broadcasting have always had their double standards. The late John Peel admitted to impregnating a 15-year-old, but his autobiography, published before the modern vogue of investigating historical sex crimes, that didn't really result in a knock on the door from Plod. There's been no interest in investigating Rolling Stone's Bill Wyman's relationship with Mandy Smith, she then 13 and he 48. In both cases, the men appear to have used power bestowed by their fame. How is that any different to the allegations made about Ted Heath or the new exonerated and apologised to Lord Bramall? People are fascinated by power, and historically it has been vested in men, so it is mainly women who succumb. When roles are reversed and the power shifts, it still works its dark magic. Just 3 years ago, the Royal Navy's first female ship's commander was relieved of duty for having a relationship with a subordinate officer 5 years her junior. So it's hard to see a seismic shift once all the Weinstein stuff dies down. Abuse of power should not happen, but it does, and it's been going on since man and woman first crawled out of the Rift Valley. We shouldn't confuse sexual shenanigans with real crimes of abuse against children. It's hard to prove coercion, although scenting blood, the authorities will have a real crack at H. Weinstein. His problem was that he was a bully too, but boy, is he paying the price now.
Now we've got a look at the alternative look at the news, and it's Jane with Belgarum Diary.
And there are two items this week. The first, Ophelia brings red sun. It looked like the end of the world. Hampshire resembled the Twilight Zone after being plunged into near darkness in scenes normally witnessed during the start of a solar eclipse. Birds stopped singing and drivers switched on their headlights as skies over Winchester and around the county grew ominously dark and gloomy at Monday lunchtime. Writing on social media, Amy Marshall said, "It's so still and so quiet, almost expecting to see the cast of The Walking Dead coming down the road." The ghostly light was caused by the sun turning bright red, creating a strange orange marmalade glow across the south for around an hour. People in homes and offices stared out of their windows as the eerie scenes unfolded, but suggestions of impending doom were wide of the mark. Weather experts revealed that the ex-hurricane Ophelia had picked up dust from the Sahara and debris from forest fires in Spain and Portugal as it travelled towards the UK. Witnesses said the red sun and orange sky looked like something from Star Wars. People in towns and cities across Hampshire looked to social media to describe the weirdly dark conditions that appeared to be full of foreboding. And there is a photograph of the sun at that time with a silhouette of the trees in front and the deep orange sky, and the sun actually in this photo looks yellow, whereas actually I think it was more like a deep purple, a bit like one of those autumn full moons that we sometimes get. The second item is the big switch on in Winchester. It's refreshing to see certain trends being bucked. One that has always rubbed Belgarum the wrong way was how many towns have opted to draft in a random celebrity to turn on their Christmas lights, rather than having someone noteworthy from the town or city to do it. In the past, Winchester has seen a number of celebs roped in to do the honours at the annual event in late November. It would appear that this year the lights in Winchester will be turned on by local celebrity charity fundraiser, the big issue seller Kevin Colick. That's what he told the Chronicle, adding that he wanted to send the message that the annual event can be a success without the need for a pointless celebrity. Organisers, the Winchester Business Improvement District BID, were shy about confirming the news. The BID's communication officer, Amy Shepherd, emailed to say, rumours are rife. And you can comment on that by writing to What Do You Think? To the letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Kevin Colick, so well known to anybody walking regularly in Winchester, the big issue seller who stands opposite Boots usually and has reddish hair and a bit of a beard and a deep pink jacket, and sells the big issue in a very lively manner, and also has raised money for charity as well as for the big issue and the homeless.
Let's have a look at what's on in the future. Well, next Saturday, the 28th of October, from 10 o'clock in the morning until 12 noon, there's the Autumn Fair with coffee at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill. And then the same day and the day after, Saturday and Sunday, 28th and 29th of October, it's Halloween weekend on the Watercress Line in Alsford. If you want some information about that, it's 01962 733 810. And the weekend after that, Saturday the 4th of November, it's time for Winchester Bonfire Night. This is where there's a parade through town. There's a firework display, the bonfire is lit, and everyone seems to have a good time down at North Walls. But if you want more information about that, I'm sure that the Winchester Roundtable people will be selling programmes, and you can also get information from the Discovery Centre or the tourist information. Now, there's a new telephonist service available with a handset with only one button on the back, which links you to a 24-hour call centre where a friendly telephonist will put a call through for you or send a text for you. There's no more remembering numbers or fiddling with your phone's memory. The service looks after your phone book with a trusted callers list. There's also a no-nuisance calls service where you only receive calls from people you want to speak to. And there's a free service looking up information on the internet. You'll get 600 minutes and unlimited text for just £20 a month. Now, for more information, go to Fuss Free Phones. That's Fuss Free Phones. And there's a free telephone number there, 0800 845 6600. That's 0800 845 6600. And then I've got a website, there's Fuss Free Phones. Fuss Free Phones, I should say. And that's www.fussfreephones.com. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 20th of October at 7:37 in the morning and begins at 6:02 in the evening. And on Wednesday the 25th of October, it ends at 7:46 a.m. and begins at 5:52 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you receive from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Heather.
Patient more choice on care. Hampshire patients are to have the opportunity to choose the treatment they would like to receive in case of medical emergency. The Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, and Andover War Memorial Hospital, has launched a new scheme which gives patients the chance to express a choice about the treatment they would like or would not like to receive by doctors and paramedics in case of a medical emergency. The scheme can be for anyone, but is particularly aimed at those of us with complex health needs, people who are likely to be nearing the end of their lives, and those who are at risk of sudden deterioration or cardiac arrest. The project, called RESPECT, allows residents to draw up a plan with their doctors and outline the care and treatments they would like to receive. This will enable doctors to make a quick decision about treatments and care in case of emergency. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We are delighted to be working with our partners at South Central Ambulance Service in primary care and in nursing and residential homes to implement the RESPECT process. RESPECT will help to ensure that patients receive the treatment that is right for them and make it easier for healthcare professionals to make the most appropriate decision in an emergency situation." The Trust will be working along with South Central Ambulance Service, GPs, community teams and nursing and residential homes to implement the national process. The scheme's also been welcomed and supported by Alton resident Roy Ford after he had the opportunity to decide what he thought it would be the best treatment for his wife Janet. She was suffering with liver and pancreatic cancer. And when her conditions got worse in the mornings of April the 19th, 2017, Mr. Ford and the ambulance crew decided that a journey to the hospital would not benefit her. And with a few hours, appropriate care was set up, allowing Janet, aged 79, to spend her final days at home with her family close by, where she passed away just a week later. Anyone who would like to draw up a plan can speak to their GP or the consultant in charge of their care.
I have Q&A, which is a Winchester resident talking about my Winchester, and it's Jonathan Walker, 64, retired of Willis Way, Kingsworthy, shares his favourite things about Winchester. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? The Stables in the Square, wonderfully diverse ciders and fantastic pizzas. What's your favourite pub or bar? The William Walker Pub. The staff are great and it has good pub ambience. What's your favourite shop? Minnie Molly's Den. Great choice of interesting things to browse and buy at good prices. What's your favourite building? St John's House in the Broadway. I worked there for many years as events and facilities manager for Emmanuel Church and Winchester YMCA. I also remember when the medieval Undercroft was used as King Alfred Bus Cafe and staff area. What's your favourite view? From St Giles's Hill. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? I have two, King Alfred and William Walker, the diver, who was instrumental in saving the cathedral. He's no relation, unfortunately. What is Winchester's best kept secret? I think the 18th century assembly room in St John's House. It's magnificent. What is the best thing about Winchester? It's the whole atmosphere of the place, which is steeped in history and has so many amazing buildings and walks. And the worst? Traffic. The clogged streets and pollution it brings. We should pedestrianise more areas like the Broadway and Square, and maybe some side streets as well. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? The traffic congestion and pollution aspect, I think. We need to think outside the box to reduce the problem. Describe Winchester in a sentence. Winchester is the pleasantest town I was ever in. That's a quote from John Keats.
And here we have Walk Highlights Modern Slavery. A walk to raise awareness of human trafficking finished at Winchester Cathedral. Organised by Winchester University students, Walk for Freedom was a part of a national and international initiative organised by charity A21 to remind us that slavery continues today. Walking in single file from the campus, around 50 participants emulated the slaves who, in the 19th century, were chained and walked in single file to board ships in Africa. There was a short gathering at the cathedral grounds where the stories of the rescues of the three former slaves were read aloud, after which the yellow bands were lifted above the walkers' heads to represent their rescue. Organiser Alice McGowan said, "The issue of modern slavery is one that many people don't know enough about. I wanted to host a walk for freedom because I feel this is a great city to help raise awareness for the victims and survivors." And there is a picture of the line of single line of students, as mentioned in Christian Comment, with the yellow bands around their mouths saying the names Eve, Ewan and Amy, dressed in black and carrying posters saying slavery still exists and human trafficking generates an estimated $150 billion annually. Abolish slavery everywhere, forever, and so on.
Gutted village church set to rise from the ashes. Plans are underway to restore St Peter's Church in Ropley, which was engulfed in flames in 2014 and almost completely gutted. More than 100 firefighters tackled the blaze near Alsford, which destroyed centuries-old medieval architecture, records dating back to the 1960s, the pulpit and a 16th-century font. All that remained were the outside walls, and it took around 6 months before the church was secure enough for firefighters to investigate, with no cause found. 4 years on, planning permission for a scheme by Architects Alexander Designs has been approved by East Hampshire District Council, and the church has received faculty, the Church of England's regulation of works to church buildings, from the Diocese of Winchester, allowing work to proceed. Alexander Design, based in Winchester, has revealed their vision, which aims to preserve the heritage of the old building within the design of the new, and it's the same shape as the old building, although the roof line is different. And although the roof is more modern tiles, it's going to still be built in flint, so it's going to, you know, carry on that long tradition of building. The interior, according to the picture, is very nice, pale wood throughout, plain cream or beige-coloured walls. Looks really nice, actually. The rebuilt church will remain a community asset. Andy Bonner of the Friends of St Peter's said, "The plans are now being turned into buildings and engineering specifications and the tender documents prepared. There's a lot of work to be done, but we want to move forward as quickly as possible. You will probably see more visitors to the church over the next month, and it is probable that some initial opening up works will begin during November. They're not building works as such, but preparatory work so that the builders know exactly what is under the flooring and the ground. Tenders will go out early next year, with a view to appointing a main building contractor to start mid-2018. And building could probably take 18 months to 2 years then, depending on the restoration and stonework. You will also see activity starting on our fundraising from early next year. And thanks to the generosity of ecclesiastical insurance, we still have most of the insured value of the building remaining, despite the additional costs incurred in getting the approvals. Still, we still need to do some fundraising."
A revamped pharmacy. A Winchester pharmacy was reopened by TV personality Dickie Davis following a major refurbishment. Lloyd's Pharmacy at St Paul's Medical Practice was opened by the former World of Sport presenter in a ribbon-cutting ceremony on October the 12th. It has expanded its services for customers, including the ability to give specialist advice for conditions such as chronic pain and asthma by introducing an enhanced pain management service. Bespoke advice to help those living with chronic or experiencing acute pain. Lloyd's Pharmacy claim that 46% of patients who take up the service have experienced reduced pain after just 4 weeks. Pharmacy manager Louise Delamere said, "We're delighted with our transformation. As people are living longer, it's important that we take a more active role in managing our health, but that we also have easy-to-access support. Pharmacy already plays a vital role in medicine management, and now with our modern makeover, we are better equipped to offer more services." And there's a nice picture there with Dickie Davis cutting tape and all the staff standing by with big smiles.
And here we have Village Scarecrow Festival raised £1,000. Youngsters from a nursery near Winchester were treated to a scarecrow trail around their village. Now in its third year, Colden Common Preschool Scarecrow Festival saw more than 100 families in the area come together for a day of straw-filled fun run by parent volunteers. There were arts and crafts, colouring and story time at the community centre on Saturday, as well as a raffle and craft competitions. Youngsters ventured around the village on a scarecrow trail for the annual event, finding clues in order to win a chocolatey treat at the end. All the funds raised will go towards the preschool, which is charity run. Jessica Zubaydi said, the preschool's treasurer said, the Scarecrow Festival was another great community event, raising £1,000 for Colden Common Preschool. 145 families joined in the fun, following the trail around the village to spot scarecrows, all depicting children's characters over the past 25 years. Participants enjoyed seeing the likes of Noddy, Pippi Longstocking, Bart Simpson and Snoopy around the village. And this is accompanied by a photograph of two of the parents, Jackie Hadley and Hannah Clark, with one of the scarecrows, which is quite clearly a brightly coloured female character from a children's storybook with a long red plait and a red hat. Dressed some sort of cowgirl, I probably ought to know the character.
Frantic struggle to save cellmate. A prisoner has described how he shouted for help and tried to save his cellmate after finding him hanging and unconscious. Father of two, Sean Plumstead, was in custody at HMP Winchester and was due to be released less than a month later when he was discovered by his cellmate, Jordan Voller. The 27-year-old was rushed to Royal Hampshire County Hospital, but he died 3 days later, on September the 18th, last year. Winchester Coroner's Court heard how both Mr. Plumstead and Mr. Voller had eaten dinner in their cell and then began watching television while Mr. Plummer went to the toilet, which is located behind a curtain in the cell. Mr. Voller told the inquest that while Mr. Plumstead was on the toilet, he needed to go as well, and added, he was still there and I was going to use the sink. I was just about to, and I could see something hanging, so I pulled back the curtain and I could see Mr. Plumstead there. I went over to him, grabbed him and tried to lift him up. Mr. Voller said that while holding Mr. Plumstead, he began sitting, kicking on the cell wall and shouting to get the attention of other people, but not realising what had happened, they told him to shut up. He then ran over to the cell door and began banging and shouting in a bid to get the attention of prison officers. He added, I don't know how long it was, but it was before the officer came, but it seemed like ages. Described how Mr. Plumstead had been quiet on the day that he was found, but said that he didn't think it was out of the ordinary. Sean was like any normal person, added Mr. Voller. He said he was going to get a job with his dad installing fire hydrants, and that would put him on the straight and narrow. What I understood was that he was getting a job and didn't want to come back to prison. And the inquest was expected to last until October the 19th.
Family pilgrimage to World War I Memorial. Hampshire family members are making a poignant journey to Flanders to pay tribute to an ancestor on the 100th anniversary of his death. William Conroy Knight was just 19 years old when he was killed by rifle fire at the Battle of Passchendaele on October the 26th, 1917. His name is carved on the Tyne Cot Memorial near Ypres and on the memorial at Brown Candover Church near Alsford. The Griffin family will travel to France to mark the anniversary of his death and lay a wreath by his name, as he has no known grave. Trevor, 56, retired firefighter of Larch Close, Kingsworthy, said, it is the 100th anniversary of his passing, being shot by a sniper. We haven't forgotten him. We're going to lay a wreath. My grandmother never spoke of her brother Bill, but his photograph was on her wall for all my lifetime. We were brought up with Uncle Bill, who had died 70 or 80 years before when we were kids, but we don't know anything about him. Visiting the cemeteries will be humbling, said Trevor. The numbers of men who died is colossal. Griffin's also going are Diana, 79, William's niece, and David, 82, his nephew, both of Rowlings Road, Wick, and Duncan, 50, and his son, William, 10, both at Main Road, Littleton. Trevor and Duncan are William's Knight great-nephews and Diana's sons. What little the family does know includes the fact that William absconded and joined up underage, lying about his date of birth, the son of James and Emily Knight, who lived at Selborne near Alton. He served with the Royal Marines Light Infantry. William Griffin is named after his great-great-uncle and has the same middle name, Conroy. In the photo, Diana is holding a memorial plaque which was issued after the First World War to the next of kin of all British and Empire service personnel who were killed. On his death, the family received a letter from his commanding officer, Lieutenant G. Gibbons, himself probably around the same age as William Knight. And yes, the picture that is accompanied, there's the Griffin family with Diana holding the plaque, and then there's the others standing around with a photo of William Conroy Knight, who was killed on the Western Front on October the 26th, 1917. And then there's the handwritten letter from Private Knight's commanding officer to the family after his death.
And this is Visit to Athletics Track Rekindles Olympic Glory. An elderly Olympic silver medalist suffering from dementia returned to the track with his carers, rekindling memories of his glory days. Adrian Metcalfe, 76, won silver for Britain in the 400 metres relay at the Tokyo Olympics in 1964, before going on to have a successful career, first as a commentator for ITV, then as the head of sport for Channel 4 when the channel launched in 1982. Members of the memory care team at the sunrise of Winchester Care Home on Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, decided to take the retired relay runner on a trip to Winchester University Sports Stadium after he had responded well to seeing photos of himself participating in the Olympics that he had received from a close friend. At first unsure, Adrian quickly found himself at home again when in the stadium. Reminded of his days in the Olympics, Adrian saw the track, held his medal and smiled. He then completed a lap of the track, quickly walking all the way around, while being cheered across the finish line by other Sunrise residents who had come to watch. Louise Merkin, activities coordinator at Sunrise of Winchester, said, "Adrian's visits to the Winchester University Sports Stadium brought back a whole host of memories related to his former glories, and we were all delighted to see him get so much pleasure from the trip. Everyone at Sunrise was inspired by Adrian's willingness and excitement to revisit the track. The experience not only had a positive impact on Adrian, but also on other team members and residents in our community. The moment Adrian crossed the finish line was incredibly touching for those of us who went along, and I couldn't help but feel that moments like this are what our job is all about." And there's a lovely photograph of Adrian Metcalfe on the at the stadium and wearing his medal proudly.
Botanists' dismay over the destruction of rare plants. A colony near Alsford of one of the United Kingdom's rarest plants has been destroyed following the removal of a hedgerow. The grubbing up to amalgamate two fields on land on Fobdown has affected the peasant's eye, a distinctive red flower which Alsford resident and botanist Pete Flood is calling a tragedy. In the 20th century, seed sorting techniques have hindered the species' means of distribution, limiting them to isolated populations, and herbicides have further decimated their numbers. Pheasant's eye all but disappeared from the United Kingdom's fields, persisting in only a handful of spots in southern England. And one of these places was an arable margin bordered by hedge and woodland at Fobdown, between Wayfarers Walk and Oxdrove Way. A number of other declining species grew there, including dwarf spurge, rye broom, and the last but one population of the pheasant's eye in Hampshire. Mr. Flood, former drummer in folk band Bellowhead, said, "It's tragic to see the loss of such prime arable margin habitat, and one of the best colonies of these exceedingly rare plant to be found anywhere in the United Kingdom. But I'm still hopeful that Natural England and the landowner can work together to repair the damage done." He said it was an example of the loss of diversity. Stone curlews, wing ousels and golden plover are all losing out to pheasants. A spokeswoman for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust told the Chronicle that they were unaware of the hedgerows removal, but that removing hedgerows to amalgamate fields is not the best practice. Mr. Flood said he had alerted Hampshire Biodiversity Information Centre, Natural England and Plant Life, and the Botanical Society of the British Isles, and hoped Natural England, who are the only ones with any clout in a matter like this, will involve themselves directly. Pheasant's eye originated in southern Europe, arriving in the United Kingdom in the Iron Age, probably in a shipment of grain, and it has now declined by more than 90%. Seeds will have survived at Fobdown, but would need the farmers' cooperation to bring the plants back in any numbers.
GPs to work an A&E at hospital. Patients at Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester will soon be treated by on-site GPs rather than staff in the A&E department in a bid to reduce waiting times and ease pressure on emergency services. The new streaming service, funded by a £54,000 grant from the Department of Health, is to be implemented after a study from Hampshire hospitals revealed that 15% of patients who visit A&E in Basingstoke and Winchester could receive the treatment they need from their GP. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said this service will improve the experience for people attending the emergency department at Winchester Hospital, and it is fantastic that we have been able to secure funds from the Department of Health to put it in place. Pressure is expected to increase on emergency departments over the winter, and it is hoped that the new service will ease this. We treated a record number of patients in our emergency departments last winter and expect to treat similar number of people this year as well. Staff across the Trust are doing a fantastic job of treating people who come into our emergency departments, but we need everyone to help ease the pressure on them by making sure that visiting the emergency department is the right course of action. Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and a health minister, said, "This is very good news and a real vote of confidence in the Trust and the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, but also the sensible way local GPs are working to integrate care. This investment will ensure my constituents get prompt and appropriate care if they need to visit the emergency department." A spokesperson for Hampshire Hospital said, "Only call 999 in the event of a life-threatening emergency, such as persistent severe chest pain or breathing difficulties. If you have an illness or injury that is not life-threatening, you should contact your GP surgery first. GPs can treat and offer expert advice on a wide range of conditions. If unsure which service would best suit your needs, you should call 111, where operators are on hand to give advice."
And here we have World War Memorial artwork arrives. A unique artwork is now in place in a Winchester suburb. Lightbox 459 arrived on Monday at St Bartholomew's Church in Hyde, timed to coincide with the Hyde Soldiers 1917-2017 commemoration, which opens Hyde 900's King Alfred weekend this evening. Commissioned by the City Council as part of the Lights Out 1418 Now initiative, the light installation, designed by local architects AR Design Studio, has been on display in various locations around the district for the past 3 years. The 459 holes in the box represent the official tally of servicemen from the Winchester area who died during the First World War, and as local resident General Sir Anthony Walker points out, there is a remarkably high count from Hyde. The Lightbox 459 installation is exciting and very important to us here in Hyde, said the General. Every year we meet to commemorate and celebrate the lives of 77 soldiers who left this community to go to war and never returned. Sir Tony, as he is known locally, is a lead member of Hyde 900's Hyde Soldiers Research Group and will be playing a big part in tonight's celebrations, which include a lecture and singing by the Fusion Choir and culminate in the placing of flags by today's householders on a map which illustrates where the fallen of 1917 lived in the area. It's a very personal and moving individual tribute to their soldier, says Caroline Scott, the coordinator of tonight's event, who has brought together army personnel from Worthy-Down and students from Peter Simmons College, as well as local people, to research the 1917 fatalities. Following Hyde Soldiers, the King Alfred Weekend provides an annual showcase for the wide range of activities and interests pursued by Hyde 900. And although that particular event will now be over, of course, there is a photograph of the light box arriving at Hyde with Cliff Bannister, Sir Tony, Jonathan Oswald from AR Design and Caroline Scott outside Hyde Church. And it's a sort of rusted metal 4 feet square box with the holes pierced all over it, and presumably the light will be inside and will glitter out of 459 holes, reminding us of the number of people.
University students celebrate their graduation. It was the day they'd all been waiting for. More than 2,000 students breathed a sigh of relief as they graduated from Winchester University over the course of this week. The annual celebrations began with a procession from Abbey House to the Cathedral on Tuesday, with civic dignitaries from across Hampshire joining staff from the university. After collecting their gowns and mortarboards from the Guild Hall, students flocked to 8 ceremonies throughout the week to mark gaining their degree in subjects from archaeology to performing arts. Chancellor of the University, Gardner and TV presenter Alan Titchmarsh, MBE, was also in attendance, handing out certificates to the hard-working graduates. Graduation is one of life's most significant occasions and is consistently one of my favourite times in the academic year, said Professor Joy Carter, who is the Vice-Chancellor at the University. Prominent public figures who've excelled in their respective fields have also been recognised for their achievements with honorary doctorates. Among those was David Suchet, best known for playing Detective Hercule Poirot in the hugely popular television drama series, who received an honorary doctorate of arts for services to acting. And Eddie Jones, England rugby head coach, was also awarded an honorary doctorate of letters for services to sport.
Pie shop expansion. A popular Winchester pie shop will be opening a new restaurant in Southampton. Winchester's only pie, mash and comic book shop, Pie Caramba, celebrated their first birthday by taking to social media to announce plans to open a new restaurant in Carlton Place. The new premises will be over 2 floors, giving the business the opportunity to cater to more customers, as well as provide a function area for private parties and events. The company is hoping to create 17 full and part-time jobs in the area with the opening of the restaurant. Though not able to commit to a firm date, it is hoped that the new restaurant will be ready to open in December. Rob Litchfield, head of Pie, owner of Pie Caramba in Parchment Street, said, "We have worked really hard to establish ourselves in Winchester, and we are really excited to be in a position to open another pie shop and spread the good word of the pie. We wanted to open another one as quickly as possible and not fall into a position where we got too comfortable with just one store." When asked about future expansion plans, he said, "We absolutely would love to open more Pie Carambas, and we've earmarked a couple of other towns for expansion if and when the time is right." And this is accompanied by a delightful picture of the couple, Rob and Mel Litchfield, standing there, both wearing jeans and a lovely dark T-shirt with a bright logo on the front of the T-shirt saying Pie Caramba.
And here we have elders learning how to impress their grandchildren. A technology masterclass was held in Winchester to help over 65s become more confident using modern devices. Home care provider Every Care hosted the first ever TechFest 65 at the Discovery Centre, welcoming residents eager to learn more about how to use smartphones, tablets, laptops, social media and apps. Attendees were treated to a number of technology presentations, live demonstrations, along with the opportunity to quiz the experts with Vodafone and Carphone Warehouse team members on hand for one-to-one Q&As and demos. The morning also gave guests the chance to network over tea, coffee and cake. Mike Frizzell, Managing Director of Everycare for Central Hampshire, said, TechFest 65 was a great opportunity for the older population of Winchester to learn new skills. Getting to grips with new technology isn't easy, but we hope that attendees are now able to go off and demonstrate their newly found tech skills to impress their grandkids. And this is accompanied by a photograph of two of the grandmother age ladies, we should say, being helped to understand some of the very complex issues of modern technology by a young man.
Glass tour. Winchester Cathedral will be holding a tour looking at the history and production of its collection of stained glass on October the 28th. The cathedral's collection of stained glass spans nearly 700 years, with examples dating as far back as 1330, all the way to the modern day. On the tour, attendees will learn about the different techniques used to produce the coloured glass and pot metal that adorn each of the cathedral windows, looking at examples from several noteworthy Victorian makers, as well as medieval and modern examples of the craft. The tour concludes with a hot drink and cake in the cathedral refectory.
I'm afraid that concludes the extract for the week ending 20th of October 2017. Thank you to our editors, Linda Vincent, Keith Vincent and Jean Gardner. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.